some of those things. What is a Shri Guru and Shri Go? And I'm following what is it? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sukha Adishteshvaka Teshu Bhuya Vita Danamas Sva Chikirushitam Yat Vigyapayam Asa Vivikta Cheta Upasthito Agre Vigrihita Hani Sukho Pavishte Shvadate Shubhuya Krita Pranama Svachikirshitam Yat Vidyapayam asa vivikta cheta Upasito gre vigrihita pani Sukho pavishte shvadate shubhuya Krita pranama svachikirshitam yata Vigyapayam asa vivikta cheta Upasito gre vigrihita pani Sukho pavishte shvadate shubhuya Krita pranama svachikirshitam yata Vigyapayam asa vivikta cheta Upasito gre vigrihita pani
Thank you.
No. Sukha happily upavishteshu, all sitting down. Atha, thereupon. Teshu, unto them, the visitors. Bhuya, again. Krita pranama, having offered obeisances. Sva, his own. Chikirshitam, decision of fasting. Yat, who. Vigyapayam asa, submitted. Vivikta, cheta, one whose mind is detached from worldly affairs. Upasthita, being present. Agre, before them. Abhigrihita, anihi, humbly with folded hands. Translation. After all the rishis and others had seated themselves comfortably, the king, humbly standing before them with folded hands, told them of his decision to fast until death. Purport. Although the king had already decided to fast until death on the bank of the Ganges, he humbly expressed his decision to elicit the opinions of the great authorities present there. Any decision, however important, should be confirmed by some authority. That makes the matter perfect. This means that the monarchs who ruled the earth in those days were not irresponsible dictators. They scrupulously followed the authoritative decisions of the saints and sages in terms of Vedic injunction. Maharaj Parikshit is a perfect king. As a perfect king, followed the principles of consulting the authorities even up to the last days of his life. So this principle of authority then becomes very important, actually in everybody's life, but especially in devotees' lives, is that by authority, then we know what we're doing is correct. Because it's actually very important. We may think, I don't need authority, I'm independent. But unfortunately, there's only one person like that in the cosmic creation. And unfortunately, we're not it. Spot's taken. Right? It's like already fulfilled, that spot. So he can act without anybody because everybody is in him. So he is the complete whole. So he can be independent because he is everything. We're only part of everything, so we can't be independent. Our existence depends upon others. So without authority, there will not be, just in general, there will not be the, how do you say, the confidence that what we're doing is correct. We may, with our attitude, do so many things and this and that, but ultimately, there's always that need to feel what's going on is right, what's correct. So that's natural. So the great personalities, they understand this from the beginning. It's one of the first things in training. Naturally, it's there.
In other words, acceptance of authority is the general natural, nature of a living entity, is that they naturally accept the authority of the mother. And then when they see that the mother accepts the authority of the father, then it continues it there. And then they see the father accepts the authority beyond that, you know, to his superiors. And like this, then it goes back through the parampara to Krishna. So this then establishes very nicely this flow. So this is, it's just inherent. So unless something happens in this chain, then it may be found in a person that it's difficult for them to accept authority, because the whole natural chain has been broken. But if that chain is not broken, then it works. Authority means respect. You know, there's respect for it. One may be following, not for, but there's a respect for that. There's an inherent appreciation of the concept of authority. So this is important because ultimately there's Krishna. Krishna is the last, you know, the buck stops with Krishna, you know, or the rupee or whatever it is that they have to be using. So it stops with Krishna. So if one doesn't accept authority below, one doesn't actually accept his. It will be compromised. You know, this idea, oh, I only accept the top, but that means you don't actually accept. Like you'd have those who would only accept Prabhupada's direction, they wouldn't listen to anyone else. So that's nice, that's better than listening to nobody. But what is missed is that the mission was Prabhupada's. The people were in their position of authority under Prabhupada's authority and direction. The instructions were based on Prabhupada's instructions. So what's missed is that by not respecting the authorities that Prabhupada's put in place, that they are actually not really respecting Prabhupada. As a person, yes, they're respecting him. But as the acharya, no. Does that make sense? Because the acharya establishes the mission, and so then the mission is him. It's just like if we go out and we harass a tree. You know, we walk by, we pull the leaves, we whack it with a stick, break the bark, break, you know, like this. You know, it's normal. You see kids do it all the time. But that means actually you don't respect the higher authority, because whose tree is it? Right? So, therefore, Krishna mentions in the third canto that the deity worship that he's explaining, Kapila Muni is explaining, actually only becomes perfect to the Lord when you respect all living entities. Because otherwise, to him, it doesn't mean anything. You respect him, but not his creation. Because he doesn't see the difference. Does that make sense? Means the father doesn't see the difference between him and the son. The son sees the difference. Right? This is a Chintabheda Veda Tattva. Krishna doesn't see any difference between him and everybody else. So it's okay for him to look at it. It's all one. You know, because it is. But for us, we see the difference. Because we're not God. Right? God's God, and we're part of him. And so everything, does that make some sense? So that's the point, is that it's natural that the parent sees the child as non-different, but the child sees the difference. Right? So that's the thing, is that actual respect of the authority means respecting everything around. So if we actually respect Krishna, it means we have to respect the devotees, have to respect the scriptures, have to respect the Dham, everything that's coming from Krishna. And at the same time, we act properly with all living entities. That's one of the symptoms of advancement, is we act properly with everybody. Right? We don't act properly. Whenever he would travel, he'd meet all kinds of people. And he was very pleasant with them. They go away with a nice feeling. They come with an attitude, this, that, you know, and they go away very happy. You know, that was his potency. So that's normal. So here then, respect, the acceptance of authority is important for the living entity just to feel confident and be stable in life. He has to feel what he's doing is right. He's got to be accepted by somebody. No one has nobody. Right? Even we say, oh no, there's these bad guys, they're off on their own, but there's always a few guys off with a bad guy on their own. And those guys that are operative are telling the bad guy is great. Right? Very rare you have one guy that just is alone. Otherwise you have, no, but there's guys, you know, they live out in the cabin somewhere and all that. But if he's so satisfied, why is he sending bombs into the city? He's got to be recognized. You know? For better or worse, he has to be recognized. So no one can be alone. Only Krishna. Because his being alone means he's there with everybody. So he's never alone. So then this principle is there. Then another is then we see is that in ruling, then if you are an authority, you always have to have an authority above you. There is no one who is an authority who has no one above them. They're not an authority. They may claim to be, others may claim that, but they're not. Right? And no one follows that authority. You'll find who follows the authority, which authority is the authority who is following someone. Right? Everyone's following Prabhupada because he's following Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the previous acharyas. That's what they're following. Does that make some sense? So that's the principle. If the authority is following, everyone will follow him. Because you can't get someone to do something you are not willing to do. Does that make sense? Many times we find it difficult. Oh, the child won't do this, won't do that. But if you look at it, it's because what you want them to do is actually something you don't necessarily want to do. You may be doing it, but you don't want to do it. Right? You're washing the pots, but you don't want to wash your pots, but you have to wash the pots. So the kid also doesn't want to wash a pot, but they're not mature enough and they don't have the responsibility that if the pots aren't washed, it's their fault. Right? They're a kid in the house. Their parents will take care of that. When they get big, then they'll also reluctantly wash the pots because there's no one else. Does that make sense? There's someone who likes to wash pots and people like to wash pots with them. They can train them in washing pots because they have the taste for it. Does that make sense? It's just the principle. Bhakti comes from bhakti, so therefore any interest in anything comes from someone who has an interest in it. Does that make sense? That's the point. Someone likes something, then it's done. So that indirectly can be used for one's own introspection, because if you find the kids don't like to do something, then somewhere in there you got it yourself. You may have corrected it, you may have improved it, so now you'll be able to change it for the child. But if not, then it's something to look at, because it's there. Otherwise, where did they get it from? Right? They didn't get it out of a Cracker Jacks box, right? They got it from you. And you still have it, therefore they have it. So that's the principle, is that if the authority is following authority, they'll follow. Does that make sense? So that's important. Now the kings, because they're managing, they get so much absorbed in what they're doing, they don't sometimes can't see the forest through the trees. They're so absorbed in the detail, they have to have the opinion of the Brahmins who are detached. Because it's actually the detached opinion that is of value. Modern makes it's the attached opinion that's of value. But the attached opinion is clouded by the attachment. The detached opinion means God's opinion, the sage's opinion, the shastra's opinion. That's the real opinion. Then we bring our attached opinion in line with that. Then it becomes purified, even though it's still, has its imperfection, but it's in proper line. So the kings, because they would be, it's their kingdom and all these things, then they'd get overly absorbed. So sometimes they may overemphasize something that doesn't need to be, or something that needs to be emphasized, they put less, just due to circumstance. It's normal, it's natural. So therefore, you need the opinion of others to help you keep the proper direction. So this goes for everybody. Whatever you're managing your own life, still, you know, something. So the king here has made a decision, and he wants to make sure that it's proper. Right? It's not some reaction, some pendulum swing, or something like that. He wants to make sure it's what he's done is a proper balanced approach to the situation. He's decided to go to the Ganges, give up everything, go to the Ganges, and fast till death. Okay, do the sages agree with that? Because there's so many processes you could use. Right? He could go and take like a Ashtanga yoga, or sit down and do a step. He could do so many different things. So he puts it before the sages who have come. And so then what we will see is then they will, you know, different things will come up, and then eventually it will be that Sukadeva Goswami will give the direction. So here we see is that also very subtly hinted at here, is that Parikshit Maharaj, he gives up as king and goes sits down next to the bank of the river. So how is it that now so many sages have come? Why are they all there? What is happening? Why would the sages come? Right? I mean, just for fun, you know, they sit around and make bets how many days will last before he, you know, starves to death, or, you know, what's the reason that they're there? It's because they're there for association and to hear Bhagavatam. Right? In other words, hearing the glories of the Lord in the association of devotees is the most important thing in one's life. There's nothing else more important like that. Everything else is there is because we think something else is more important. So it's all there. You know, making money, or family, or this, or that. Then other things are scheduled into our life. But the real thing is that hearing the glories of the Lord in the association of devotees. That's the actual substance. That's the important thing. So we see that the Bhagavatam is constantly giving us this point, constantly giving us this direction. This is actually what we're trying to obtain. So here then we see is that the scene for the Bhagavatam is being set that all these sages have come to hear, because Sukadeva Goswami is the authority, and so then they'd like to hear, even though they're great, even his own father is there to hear, right? Because of that special realization that is there. It's also just, we take from this last sentence, even up to the last days of his life when he's following the principles, is that one of the points that will stop you from developing prema is thinking I'm a great devotee. Right? You'll get stuck on this. I am a guru of Vaishnavas and I'm advanced. These two will stop you dead in your tracks at the point of in the middle of Baba for hundreds of lifetimes. These two have to be given up. So by always accepting authority, we always understand I'm the humble servant of the servants. Then I'm not the guru, my guru is the guru, and I'm not great, he's great. Then one can get past this. Otherwise one will get stuck. It's very important. Because suddenly that comes into light, I'm special, and I've been around for so long, or I'm this, or I'm that, or position, or, you know, like this. But ultimately, it's useful for administration and management, but for going back to Godhead, it's not. So that's why it has to be accepted for application, but not as one's own personal value. Does that make sense? This is Yukta Vairagya, right? In other words, the position in this and that, is it's illusory, it's useless, but because it will push forward the movement, it's used, right? Parikshit Maharaj, he wants to establish the religious principles. He's standing there in front of this, you know, so-called king harassing a cow with one akshahini of warriors standing behind him. He says, stop doing that. And then the other guy goes, yes, sir. Right? And so he can do that all over the planet. He can make anybody follow their religious duties. Because they take it seriously that if you're emperor of the world and you have a big army there, and if you don't, it's going to be bad for your health. Then they're serious about it. You know? They're serious. Does that make sense? So that's Yukta Vairagya. But we can see that as soon as he's cursed, immediately he just drops everything. You know, he doesn't take his favorite ring with him down to the Ganga, or his, you know, no, nothing goes like that. Does that make sense? So Yukta Vairagya means you're using something in Krishna's service, but it itself is not the value, right? Unless it itself has an inherent value. It means it's Krishna's name, it's his form, it's his qualities, it's his pastimes. You know, it's something directly connected to Krishna. But otherwise, we use so many things in Krishna's service, but it itself is not the value. That's Yukta Vairagya. If it becomes important to you, then it's not Yukta Vairagya. Does that make sense? So here is one may use these things, authority, position, and all those, because one can do so many nice things for Krishna. But one ultimately doesn't stick to that. Does that make sense? It's used. The king is a brahmachari before he takes up the service. And when the son takes over, then he's out the door. Does that make sense? He's not sitting there on the side counting it, you know, chanting his japa, and he's got his Gita there, and his son is running the shop, and he's got one eye on the Gita and one eye on the cash box, you know. It's not like that, you know. It's like he goes, and he goes with nothing, right? He doesn't take his little retinue with him and his little, no, he just goes with nothing. So that's the point, is that it's important for the service, that facility and position, right? Who's going to listen to that he's the king, but he's got a smaller house than you? Or he's got less money than you? No, so he's got to have the most of everything. Then you respect, okay, this guy's the king. You know, that's how you know. It's just human nature. Okay. Like I said, any questions on this? Comments, yes.
Once in a problem, I said that we can live in the forest can provide berries, and just the rest of the time here in Cham. That is the real purpose of human life. You said that everything else exists because we want it, but not really it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
How can we really use it for ourselves, even if we need to preach? How we can become more self-sufficient in terms of depending on Krishna, not so much on what is outside?
Mm-hmm. Okay, question is this, how do we become more dependent on Krishna rather than the externals of the material energy? See, the process of devotional service is shifting the attachment that we have from the material energy to Krishna. Right? That's actually what we're trying to do. So the problem is not, we're not trying to remove the concept of attachment, we're trying to change where we're attached. Right? Because the difficulty is because we're attached to material energy, we're not attached to Krishna. So material energy is illusory, so we don't get any benefit from it. Right? It's not substance, we're substance. So we're not going to get anything from that. Just like for us, if we eat air, it's not going to make us happy. Because it's not substance to us. Right? So, that's the point. And because our nature is, we're connected to Krishna, so only in recognizing and interacting with Krishna, then are we actually going to be satisfied. So, attachment's normal, but the problem is we've attached ourselves to here. We've attached ourselves to the material energy. So then there is a process of detachment to get us out of the material energy, but it's not, it's only a tool. It's like a thorn is taken out with a thorn. So fruit of action is taken out by renunciation. They're both thorns. Right? The two sides of the same thing. So it's, one is used to get rid of the other, but actually we're trying to create attachment to Krishna. But until the problem is if we just say it like that, then the tendency will be, well, I don't need to deal with the renunciation. Then we will interpret our mundane concept of attachment and overlay that on Krishna. So we will deal with Krishna how we deal with the material energy. Problem is it has the Purusha Bhav to it. So we're still trying to lord it over the material energy and exploit it and enjoy it. But that's not how you deal with Krishna. Krishna is, he's the controller and enjoyer. We're the servant. Right? Does that make sense? So any even control is for Krishna's enjoyment, not for ours. Mother Yashoda is not reveling in her authority over her son. She is only acting as an authority because it would be better for him. He'll grow up properly, he'll eat, because otherwise he'll just play all day. He doesn't know that you have to eat regularly and what you have to eat. He'll just play or, you know, go off and steal some yogurt or, you know, he won't take care of himself. So the mother exercises his authority so that he will be, you know, he will be benefited. That's the purpose. Does that make sense? So it's not that I am the authority and I feel good because I got control. You know what I'm saying? So there's underlying currents of wanting to be in that position of authority that go, how you say? That are the problem. They're impersonal. I am advanced. Then is the problem is because we think we're God. I am the guru of Vaishnavas means I think I am the devotee. That's also impersonalism, where I think I am the devotee. This is like we think I'm God, but if we think we're Mother Yashoda or Radharani or that, that's also impersonal. So these two points are the last and, you know, just the subtlest aspects of this. Yes, the more you advance, then the pride also goes. But one has to see is that actually it's a reflection. That's why Chaito Darpana Marjanam. You're cleansing the heart, so naturally then as a mirror it will reflect the good qualities of Krishna and the devotees. So any good quality we have, that is because of the mercy of Krishna and the devotees. So it's their quality, it's not ours. But because the heart is pure, it's reflecting better. So for ourselves, we have to work on it. We shouldn't be proud. Others should respect it because even though they say, well, that's not them, it's Krishna, but their heart is pure that reflects it. So they have to be respected for that. So this element, these elements are there. Does that make some sense?
How the heart becomes pure is pride.
One, if it's proud, then that will disturb what's there, will create a weed. But it doesn't mean that there's always moments where one's not proud. When proud is when you're thinking about it. In other words, you're proud when you're not doing it. You know, as we were mentioning before on perception, like that, or where it's gained from. When you come to the platform of the mind, it can be experienced, or it can be separately looked at. It can be analyzed. It means, in other words, you're with friends and you're having a good time. You're experiencing a good time, but you cannot think I'm having a good time. As soon as you think I'm having a good time, the good time is stopped. Now you're thinking I'm having a good time, you're not actually doing it. So as soon as you become proud, you're not actually doing the thing that you're proud about. That's why if the pride's too much, then you lose because you can't do the activity. Right? You can't be an instrument for the activity you're proud about. You're proud to say, whatever, like here, management. But if you're proud, you're not managing. Then maybe it may go in and out, there'll be a moment you'll do it and then go back into the proud. Hey, that was good. And then they'll say, like, wow, aren't I great? You know, and again, but there has to be, you're only getting result because there is a moment where you're not. But if you're always proud, nothing happens. It can't happen because you can't experience it and think about it at the same time. It doesn't work like that. Because analyzing it, that's intelligence. Experiencing it, that's the mind. So two different things, you can't do them at the same time. Does that make some sense? So one just has to work and understand that the qualities are coming from elsewhere. That already exist. Humility, advancement, all these already exist. We can become part of it. the Lord and his associates and their interaction already exist, we can become part of it. We're not it. It's not because we're there now, it's now the pastimes are complete. You know, and the reason Krishna and everybody's, you know, how you say, fervently preaching in that is because the pastimes aren't happening because we're not there. You know, it's not quite like that, you know. So the pastimes are going on fine. Prabhupada makes that point of Krishna's there with hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis, so he doesn't need us to cook for him or dress him or bathe him. You know, they're doing fine. But because of their kindness, they allow us to take part. So if we assist them in their already pastimes of cooking and bathing and serving and preaching and managing, then it's great. But if we think we're doing it, we are the pujari, we are the preacher, we are the manager, then it's kind of like, hey, you know, there's 100,000 other ones over there, and we're only saying 100,000 because that's what we can count, you know, like that. You know, it's like 16,108 gopis are prominent because that's there. But actually, then the next down is, you know, how you say, 1.6 million. That's the next group. And that's just because beyond that, it's a little hard to keep track. You know, you only got 20 minutes for a pastime, and it's hard to count past, you know, that much. You know, does that make sense? Okay. So, yes.
In the third point, they mentioned that Inga made a decision to, about what he was going to do, and he expressed that he was deciding to find out what response he was going to get. At what point were we making that decision? Maybe should we be searching for the authority?
At what point should we be searching for the authority? Means we should see that what we're doing is accepted by authority. So he, by his position, and what he's learned from authority, made that decision. It means from authority, he's understood about the position of the Ganga, about the perfection of human life, remembering the Lord, and how one must give up all material attachment. In other words, giving up everything material and always meditating on the Lord, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to switch our focus from here to there. So you're mentioning our attachments from here to there, our energies, our endeavor, everything. So that is heard from authority. He's chosen the detail of sitting down next to the Ganga and fasting till death, you know, and giving up his kingdom. That's what he's chosen as a path to get that goal. So if no one else comes around, that's what he's going to do. But since the sages all came there, then naturally you would present it before them as, that's what I decided to do, so is that okay? Does that make sense? So if there is the advantage to take to see, then one would take advantage of it. One must make sure, but he's doing this not to make himself the center of attention. He's just stating the fact that this is what I'm doing. You know, it's a common thing that one makes up reasons to go to authority to present oneself, because oneself is very important, being the center of the universe, and you want to get, you know, how you say, emotional interaction from all angles. So, you know, and what better is there than authority? They're strong, they're powerful. A moment's association's got so much emotional potency to it. You know, it's better than 10 other people who are less potent. So emotionally it's great, but that's not what the example the king's giving. Here he's going because they're authority, and he's accepting the authority rather than, you know what I'm saying, using the authority. Does that make sense? Okay. Something else? Yes. Do we have a right to be upset if we're disrespected? From the managerial point of view, if the person who's disrespected us in any way, would lose benefit by doing that. But personally, no. You know what I'm saying is, as some variety of authority to those who are dependents of you, they disrespect, then it's bad for them, because bad for them and bad for whatever activity is trying to be performed, because if they don't accept his authority, things won't get done. And for their own personal development, that would be bad. Does that make sense? Or it may be someone outside the circle, but by them disrespecting you, it will have effect on your service and on your juniors, that it'll make it harder for them to function. That's there. But if it's not, then there's no need. But personally, then they're only an instrument. Like that. So the two have to go on. One is there's the service, but then there's also one's personal spiritual development that has to be looked at. Is that personally you can't be like that. Because if you do, then your vision will be clouded and your decisions may be wrong. Because what they're saying may be right, the attitude was wrong. Or what they're saying may be wrong, but their attitude isn't. You know, so it's, you don't know. Or the principle is right, the detail is wrong. Like that. So all these different things. So ego will cloud that we will not then look at it and see, okay, well, what is it? And if we didn't have some ego or something, it wouldn't bother us. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is that if it's not important to us, we don't care. You know, it's just like you have some simple rural person, and he's comfortable with that and knows it. You know, if someone says, hey, you're just a villager, he'll laugh. Yeah, I'm a villager, you know. What are you? You know, he's fine. He has no problem. But someone else who is their villager, but they kind of wish they weren't, but they don't have an opportunity. Hey, you're a villager. Oh, why do you have to say this, that? We're all like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. Is it only affects you because there's something personally wrong with your heart that it does. But otherwise, then there's the position. It can't be, the authority can't be flaunted. But, so it has to be corrected, but it doesn't mean that you have to personally be affected. You know? It means it has to be corrected if it's wrong. But it's not that you personally need to be affected. Does that make sense? Okay. So, yeah. Yes? Please.
In terms of authority, like for example, a husband or a father, when see there is some respect to authority, because his authority has been given by Krishna, you don't say nothing, you don't stop, you just spoil it.
Yeah, no, that's that. Means, so the point is that if one's in a position of authority, so example is given as a husband or as a father, and something is being done that's disrespectful to authority, one can't leave it. Because it's your responsibility to see that it's properly affected. You have means you're responsible for those under you, so they have to be functioning properly, whether that's with you or with others. Naturally, with yourself, you'll be more tolerant and find, you know, longer-term ways to get it through. If it's with outside the family or people, you know, the direct, then that has to be dealt with immediately, because that can't be tolerated. But in the family, then you can work it out. But it can't be let. You, in the long run, you don't let it go. An incident may be let go, but the principle can't be. You may find to say something now may not work, but later on when the opportunity arises, then at that point, if need be, you can refer back if dealing with the incident at that time doesn't get the work done. Yeah, without authority is no culture. So there has to be. But what I'm just saying is just in dealing with it, that the authority also, it's not authority for authority's sake. Authority is because they are more clever and more intelligent and have better standards. That's why they are the authority. So they exercise that authority by proving it, by very cleverly getting it done. Right? Because here, you mentioned husband and children. They both are impressed by cleverness. Women are four times more clever than men. So that means cleverness is four times more valuable to them than to a man. A man's clever, it's nice, you know, but that's not necessarily why you like him. But if a man's clever, that's very valued by women, you know. So therefore, cleverly finding a way to get the point across, that's establishes you as an authority. Does that make sense? And kids are always impressed by cleverness, because they're always trying to be clever, though they are not always successful. You know, like that. You know, it's like punks. You're clever, they respect you. Just that they're not so mature, so their cleverness isn't called clever, it's called being a punk. Like that. Clever. Clever would be intelligently getting something done that may not have been the obvious. Right? Practical, it's the obvious. It's like the very just down-to-earth, most simplest way to get it done. That's practical. Clever is, there's some subtlety to it. Like that. So it has, therefore it gives more rise to, how you say, the subtler aspects of rasa. You know, it's just like for men it's practical because chivalry is so important. So that's down to earth. So it's appreciated. But the cleverness is appreciated by the others because it's subtle. It's not so gross. So, you know, it's like double meanings in words, or you got something done and it looks like it's one thing but it's actually another. You know, that's highly impressive. So it's there. So it's just, in other words, it can be applied in that it's the most practical way to get something done is to use cleverness. Because pure pragmatism, because it lacks emotional content. In other words, let's see, here we could put another way is, practical would be, it's without emotion. Cleverness is with emotion. It's at least taking into consideration. Right? So rasa is involved in one, and the other one is just tattva. You know? That's there. Is that's very generic. You know, there'd be details.
Right judgment.
It means, yeah, the proper judgment of time, place, and circumstance. One that's also practical, but it's because you have to take into the consideration the mentality. That's why you have to use cleverness, because it may be the most practical to do it like this, but it actually won't get it done because the person won't react in the proper way. Yeah, so you have to be considerate, you have to, all these nice qualities come out of it, because to be clever, then you have to be sensitive, you have to be considerate, because cleverness can't be, it can't be exploited. As soon as the cleverness starts to disturb the other person's ego, it's not clever anymore. You know what I'm saying? Clever is like neutral. You're involved, but at the same time you're slightly detached. So it's actually clever. Krishna is the most clever.
And make the other one understand.
Yeah. So it's actual, real, it's a real quality of masculinity. But it has to be kept where it is, you know, properly balanced. That makes sense?
May I ask, what if the authority of your guru is reflected in the more medial authorities?
What if the authority of your guru
isn't reflected in your immediate authorities? Like, you don't see, there's some discrepancy in maybe your temple authority isn't really.
The authority of your guru, meaning the guru's, the person above the guru, or you mean the potency of authority of the guru is not reflected? You know what I'm saying?
No.
The guru's guru.
I'm just talking about, like, a Diksha guru, say, your guru and their teachings.
Uh-huh.
And then, on a practical level, your temple authority or the people that are above you in your local situation, and you see that they're not meeting. Are you able to just sort of scrap your more immediate authorities?
No, you have to find, because you have to work, it means you have to work with the local authorities. In other words, the guru is giving you a principle, a concept. That concept is explained through a detail. So now you have to go back with what is actually the point that's being made, and then look at the detail that the temple president is talking about. And then try to make it match. Because he wants to get something done. And the guru wants you to have the proper mentality in doing that. Right? So then you just have to try to work to make the two match. Because you don't go by just the external. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, there's no easy path. It's all work. It's all work. We'll just end here and then we'll continue. Okay. Rantarai Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarvita Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaura.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because it's just, I just have to.
Kill Yudhishthira. So now this is a problem. How is he going to kill his own brother? So Krishna suggests, well, insult him. That's death. You know, that's death. So then the question is how is that death? Basically. So it's that for someone, Krishna mentions, so for someone who's honored, dishonor is worse than death. That's the natural principle. So that's why it's and that's why it's, let's say, like begging, then in Sanskrit as an occupation it's called mrita, which means death, because by begging one is constantly being humiliated or humbled, and a lot, and some people don't react nicely. It's not everybody is liberal. Many times people are, you know, harass or miserly, or that you're begging, they take it as something low class, or you're a parasite, or, you know, so many things like this that bother you. Have Sukadev Goswami is wandering around as a Paramahamsa, and he gets two reactions. One is that the ladies are following around because he's so cute, and the boys are following around because he just is crazy. And so they're laughing and joking and doing all kinds of strange things. Also the Avantipur Brahmin. Also, he took sannyas, he's just living outside the village and begging, so all the punk kids all like to come and harass him. It's just normal. Like that. We generally only hear about the good stuff, you know, but it all goes on. So then, because the position's there and you're removing that position. So then position being lost, that's rasa, so it's a kind of death. Does that make sense? It's like you had, someone is a mother, and then the child says, you're not my mother. So that means that relationship is gone. So that it's a death of that relationship. You know, it's not physical death, but it's the death of that relationship.
You cannot function as an authority toward this person anymore.
You can't function.
Like this authority, you cannot function as an authority toward this person.
So they can't function as authority to someone who's insulted them. Not unless they have other means to apply their influence. You know what I'm saying? If there's other methods of influence that will establish, even though they don't accept your authority, but they have to follow it, you know what I'm saying? Then that's there. Like, you know, someone may not, Kali may not accept Parikit Maharaj personally as an authority, but that he kind of has to listen because there's, you know, 100,000 guys standing behind him just ready to, you know, cut him up in little pieces if he gets out of hand. You know, so there are different methods. The king goes out and conquers another kingdom, the other king may not accept him personally. He may still remain an enemy, but he accepts his authority just managerially. Does that make sense? So there's the ruling acceptance, and then there's the formal acceptance because of management structures. So as long as the management structure works, one can still function as authority. If that breaks down, then no.
What then is the flow of men standing from the highest authority through this authority to this inferior person, like its daughter?
Naturally, it would be. It depends upon the authority. The flow of the mercy, if that authority is in a position that they are giving the mercy. If it's just managerial, there'll be some element of it. It means they'll be well-wishing, so therefore Krishna is pleased, but it's not necessarily that they are the spiritual connection, if it's managerial. But if it's spiritual, then that's another thing. But if the authority is still well-wishing, then it won't impede the opportunity for it, but the offense will impede their ability to take advantage of it. Does that make sense? Is that fair? Because the normal thing is that the authority is still a well-wisher of the juni, even though they're probably, just like the child may behave badly, it's not that now the mother hates the child. No, she just corrects and this and that, she still takes care. You know, she'll feed the child, she may not talk to him. But, you know, it's still, everything goes on. Does that make sense? Some other questions? What is it? The balance between spiritual and material endeavor. Spiritual service and spiritual life. Because we're materially affected. Then, how do you say, our consciousness and all that will affect our service and our spiritual endeavor. Does that make sense? So if we're in a good mood, generally we tend to be more attentive and more. If we're in a bad mood, we may not. It may be the opposite. Sometimes if we're in a bad mood, we'll take more shelter of the name and this and that. So it's just whatever works. But the point is that because of material conditioning, the tendency is to our own conditioned values will make important. So therefore then services that fit those values will generally be more enthusiastic than ones that don't. You know what I'm saying? Sadhana, if our life is going nice, then we tend to pay more attention to it. You know? This is in the long run. In the beginning, it's so nice, that sadhana, we are focused on it, so we take full advantage. And even though we have a hectic life going on around us, we don't notice it. But as we become practiced in spiritual life, where it becomes part of like second nature, then that's the point of habit. Habit you can do without thinking. So it means we can practice our sadhana without thinking. Does that make sense? So that's the time when you'll notice it. Because if we're not thinking about the sadhana, we're going to be thinking about something else. And that something else, may be connected to Krishna, may not be connected. It may be connected to spiritual, may be connected to our conditioned nature. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that we want to be careful that the spiritual life and the service are always take precedent. But at the same time, it cannot in the long run affect our other elements of our life to the point where then the service and the sadhana will be affected. You know what I'm saying? It means like, let us say we fast for a day on Janmashtami. So that works. We don't fast for a month. You know what I'm saying? That may start to affect. So the one day, then it may veer, but it gets us, we're less attached to the eating, we've done more service to Krishna, we've done that for Krishna. You know, so there's so many benefits from it. Then it'll be easier, okay, if we come to prasad, we don't get prasad exactly at 9 o'clock, it's at 9:05, we don't die and start yelling and screaming and cursing the management and, you know, this and that. You know, we're able to, okay, I'll chant around. You know, instead of yelling and screaming for 5 minutes. So then, like that, does that make sense? So it starts to adjust things for us. Does that make sense? What's the minimum following a Prabhupada when we're performing the service of our Guru? Is the Guru is a Guru because he's following the instructions of Prabhupada. If he's not following that, then he's not a Guru in ISKCON. He can make one start his own thing, he can do. But you can't claim to be a Guru that's authorized by ISKCON. You know, he wants to take his disciples and go elsewhere. He can do that not as a disciple of Prabhupada. You know what I'm saying? He can do it on his own authority if he wants.
But I'm saying, like, two Prabhupada have so many instructions, so any disciple of Prabhupada is part of the power of every single one of
them.
What subset of Prabhupada's instructions is sufficient to know?
Cooperate with devotees, hear Bhagavatam chant, follow the principles. These are the things. Read his books. These are the basics. Because, in other words, you're going to apply what's happening right now. There's so many instructions, but those are for... The principle is the same. The Bhagavatam is trying to say, without the association of the devotees, you're not going to get anywhere. And without hearing about the Lord, you're not going to get anywhere. So, these two things have to be done. Right now, there's so many ways to convince you of that, and so many situations how you apply that. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, then so many different explanations are there. But basically, it all comes back to just here. It's just like that. Prabhupada mentions at least two things, giving up attachment and then hearing about Krishna. So basically it comes down to always remember Krishna, never forget him. So always remember means being absorbed in Krishna and service to Krishna. Never forget him means not being distracted by material energy. So that means to what degree you are distracted from Krishna, that you engage in Krishna's service. Okay? So then, what way applies for you to think of Krishna now from Prabhupada's instructions, and what way to engage your conditioned nature in the Lord's service that apply right now, that's what you use. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? It's 6 o'clock in the morning, you're sitting in the temple, and everybody's chanting japa, and you have some time free, and you have a bead bag. So you might go, hey, I could chant japa now. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? But let's say it's a festival and you're not in the temple, you're in the back and you're cooking for the deities. So then that's what you're going to do for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You won't be thinking, but Prabhupada said, well, you got to chant your japa. This. No, it's that. That is what you generally do, but if there's something else you would do, then you do it. But you still got to make sure the japa is done. So then you know it has to be done, so then you do it either before you start or in the evening. Does that make some sense? So in other words, you practically apply what's there. Does that make any sense? Does it get anywhere? It still doesn't. It still leaves it up to you to figure it out, right? That's the problem. You want just clear cut and dry. Do this, don't worry about it. What's the difference between someone whose spiritual master stopped being one and one who left his body as one? As far as relationship with the founder acharya, that's the same. Right? So in other words, everybody's following Prabhupada's instructions. That remains the same. Left the body, then whatever instructions were valid, one follows those. And then one takes support of others to see that that support is, that following is going on. You know what I'm saying? One whose spiritual master stopped those duties, then whatever was of value previously that worked, you use. Right? But it still is time, place, circumstance. It's still what works you use. But for continued instruction, then one needs to take shelter of senior Vaishnavas to get direction. That makes sense? In other words, the siksha is always the element that always has to be there. You know what I'm saying? Diksha, once performed by a bona fide spiritual master, is done. You know what I'm saying? It's a formality. But siksha, that must always be alive. Does that make sense? So it's alive through reading Prabhupada's books, following his instructions. It's alive by taking advantage of the association of senior devotees. Right? The main thing that's, the only thing actually, because both of them have to do that, the only thing that's actually lost is the commitment. Because the one whose guru died, so the commitment's still there. The one whose guru's left, then that commitment can't be there. So that commitment has to be there. That's the purpose of diksha, is to create commitment. So one has to shift that commitment to a siksha guru. Does that make sense? Like that. Diksha, that's up to the, between them and who they take shelter of. That's an issue. It's not necessary, it's not mandatory. But it may be favorable. You know what I'm saying? Many people feel better by the process of reinitiation. They feel it's like starting a new, you know, a new chapter. Like that. So if it's favorable, it's used. But technically, what you're trying to obtain is commitment to the instructions. That's what diksha is anyway, is commitment to instruction. But because we're conditioned, it involves a ritual along with it. Right? Does that make sense? If we're liberated, initiation consists simply of commitment to the instruction of a senior Vaishnava. There is no ritual of diksha, but that's pancharatra. So That's Bhagavad initiation. Right? They've committed themselves to that. That's why that's the most important element. Then, on top of that, you use the form of the Pancharatra. Does that make sense? You had a question?
You were saying? Devotional love
and
Krishna consciousness practicing. So I want to know which is bigger in you.
Which is bigger? Krishna conscious practicing or devotional love?
Natural devotional love. So
natural devotional love.
So which is bigger or more powerful?
But natural means it's coming from where?
Natural devotional love comes inside some devotee himself, they have special attention or devotion.
But how did they get that? How did they get that? How would they get that? How would somebody have natural devotional love in their heart?
That himself or someone can be.
But they just SMS in devotional love and then...
Because many people, I have noticed it in their devotee also, like they do more and more practice and sometimes they left. I have heard something.
But you're not answering means, okay, that's okay. You're trying to establish the situations. That's your question. Why is it somebody has practiced so much devotional service they've left and someone else who seemingly is a smaller devotee is still there? So that's the question is you can't really compare the two, because someone's advanced, they've gotten to a particular stage, but the anarthas in that that they're dealing with are different from what the younger devotee is dealing with. Right? It's just like this. Let us say the new devotee joins and he has a problem because he's attached to his girlfriend. Okay? So he has to work on that anartha of this particular girl. Right? By practicing Krishna consciousness, then with time then that goes away and he's able to function properly and be fully absorbed in his service. But that principle of that he had a girlfriend, that's a detail. The principle is that the, need for interaction with women. You understand? So that goes back more than just this life. That's been here since a long time. Right? So now, the senior devotee is dealing with that. So even though it may appear they went away, but what they went away for is a much greater thing than what the new devotee went away for. Does this make some sense? Does this make sense to anybody else? Yeah, you understand? From that being attached to women, it may manifest again as a particular woman, but it's still they're dealing with that, so they've gone up to that level. So if they drop that, they go back to that level. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the one who's dropped his attachment, he's at that point. The senior devotee who's fallen from that, as soon as he gives that up, he goes back to wherever he was before. So there is a difference. Right? The other point is just that natural devotional love. It's only there because bhakti comes from bhakti. It didn't just come out of nowhere. So that means because of their performance of devotional sukritis, therefore they have it. Does that make sense? That's one thing. But at the same time is one has to see that it's not just sentiment. One has a religious sentiment. You know? And so, therefore, you'll see that in many, like Hindu families. They could be worshipping Krishna with great devotion, and you can put a picture of Shiva, and they can worship him with great devotion. Hey, you can put Sai Baba, I'll worship him. You know, anything goes. and with great devotion and sentiment, they'll do it. So there they have a very strong religious sentiment, not spiritual. So as long as it's something that fits within the category of religious practice, then that sentiment is there. So you also have to distinguish between spiritual love and religious love. You know what I'm saying? Because probably if you'll, many times you'll notice that the person who has that natural so-called, what you're saying, devotional love, also has great affection for his family and is probably a very nice person in dealing with anybody else. He's just a nice person. Does that make sense? So he has a nice religious emotion. So he's able to apply that, you know, in his duties with family and with acquaintances. And because he understands you're supposed to worship what is higher, he can do that also. So it's fine, it's good, because anything directed towards Krishna will get you the result. But it also has to be distinguished between what is there and what is also based on actual, directly know it's Krishna. You know what I'm saying? There's a slight difference. Because otherwise, if you take that, then why is the Indians going the way of the dogs? They have plenty of that religious sentiment, but where's the spiritual? Then you got Westerners who, if you put them all together in one place, it'd be hard to find one good quality. But, you know, they're stuck in the philosophy and this of Krishna consciousness. So culturally it looks like they lack, you know, proper affection and interaction, but, you know, they doggedly hold on to the philosophy and that and won't let go. Maybe that's the difference, because they are dogs, they're able to hold on. Well, the Indians are not dogs, but they're trying to be dogs, so they work harder. Maybe that's it. I never thought of it like that. Okay. So, you understand? But if you didn't understand, everybody else did.
There was a headline news last week.
A headline?
Headline news in India.
In India.
And one IG of police, Mr. D.K. Panda. So he declared himself that I am Panda.
Radha.
And he went to Mathura, the first place, Krishna. And continuous 10 days he was staying there. But last moment, he changed his mind and he resigned from the post and he left his house also.
It means resigned as IG.
Yeah, as IG.
Okay. So that's there, but now the one problem is now. Yeah, but.
See, nowadays, everyone is talking in India about such a big post and he just left and he is becoming like this.
Okay, but the thing is that's their renunciation. Yeah, it's all happening, but if we notice there's one little problem that he says he's Radha, that he declared that I am the maidservant of Srimati Radharani, what am I doing here, and went to Vrindavan, was dancing and took up service like that, then we can take it seriously. But because he says he's Radha, now he dance for how many, 12 days you said? 10 days?
Yes.
10 days. Okay, now in 10 days you don't think he got some attention? Right? Okay, now how much, as IG, how much nice attention do you get? It's just problems. People are after you, harassing, it's politics, it's problem. But as Radha and Vrindavan, he's getting a lot of attention. So, you know, it's probably, and he's an IG, means he's been at it a while, so he must be like 40s, 50s, right? So that probably by now his wife doesn't pay that much attention to him, the kids are grown up, couldn't care less about the old man. So now he goes to Vrindavan, now it's a whole new scene. So emotionally he's going to feel well supported. So naturally, who wouldn't give up being an IG and your family and everything for the superior attention he's getting there? So it's got nothing to do with devotion. It's got to do with emotion, not devotion. It's two different things. Like that. Because if he says he's Radha, then he's an impersonalist. How would he be Radha? If he's Radha, what happens when Krishna comes and performs his, you know, how you say, the stealing of the clothes pastime, then, you know what I'm saying? Maybe a bit embarrassing, you know? You know what I'm saying? Radha doesn't have to shave every day, you know. I mean, I know they came out with a new movie about, you know, the guy wakes up in the morning as a woman, but I'm saying this guy still wakes up in the morning, still looks like a man, right?
We have seen in picture, he was sorry and using earrings and everything.
He can use, but I'm still saying is he's still got to shave. You know, his chest is a little hairier than, you know, the girls would be, you know, like that. You know, there's, you know what I'm saying? It's still, that doesn't change. So, that's just called, we call them sahajiyas. That's what we call them. Sahaj means easy. Just that easy, he just becomes Radha. Right? He just declares he's Radha and he's already Radha. Pretty easy, right? You know, just like a, you know, the IG declared he's the prime minister. It doesn't happen. It's not that easy. But because it's spiritual, then those who don't know, you know, if he goes back to his village and says, yes, I'm the prime minister, people may believe him. But in outside his village, they won't. So, you know, sitting there, then maybe people believe. But those who are actually spiritual know that this is just a joke. Okay? Okay.
So I'll explain that when I lose the mind today, as soon as you start analyzing, the experience stops. I was learning this process of struggling and reading books and giving, but all of that analyzing is part of the emotional service, but there's some knowledge about that.
Yeah, that you're relishing it while it's going on, but as soon as you go, wow, this is great, you're not reading and analyzing. I mean, you're not reading, you're not experiencing. Think about it. As soon as you go, you know, you're reading this and now this is so great, and you're going, wow, this is great, but you're not, the experience of its greatness is not happening at that moment. You may then go back into it and start reading. All I'm saying is, this is on the five levels of perception. This is how it works. Just like this. The example is given of this. This is called aparoksha. Right? That you are sleeping. Right? Now in the morning I can ask you, how did you sleep? And you can tell me if it was good or not. But when you're sleeping, you can't. If you can tell me if you're sleeping well or not, you're not asleep. You understand? That's the point. Is the experience is, you can, it's there as long as it's just happening. But as soon as you put in the intelligence, it takes it to the next level. It's a different experience. In other words, how do you know you're enjoying it? Because it's coming from the mind. So it's just experienced. You know what I'm saying? That's why, let us say, because the man works on intelligence, so he will have a reason, this, that. Women work by experience. That's why they can't explain it. Because as soon as they explain it, it's lost, so they don't want to explain it. They don't like to deal analytically, unless it's they can't, you know, something's wrong here, then they'll analyze it, figure it out. But that's only to get back to the point of experience. But if the experience is going on, they don't want to discuss it. Because as soon as you discuss, it's lost. Because the man, it's, you know, he likes to analyze, that's there. So therefore, and then after analyzing, then he can say that was nice. You know what I'm saying? It's a different headspace.
Mm-hmm.
No, yes. Okay, we're saying that rational and emotional are there at the same time. In the ladies, what we're saying is the foundation is the emotion. Their rationale works within emotion. A rationale has to get an emotion. Well, the men's rationale has to get a result. You understand? Man's endeavor must get a result. Woman's endeavor must get an experience. Right? The man gets a result, good, bad, or otherwise, he's got the result. You know? But the woman, it's got to get the right experience. So what's correct result is what gives the right experience. You understand? If the man can do the things that he wants, he considers that what was a good experience. You understand? I got up in the morning, I did this, I chanted my rounds, no one bothered me, I did this and that, it's great. So then he says that was a great day. Right? But the woman, it's what was happening when you're chanting and when you're getting up and when you're doing that. That's what's important. You know what I'm saying? So they can think within that, but it's to maintain it. This is going nice now. This is a good mood. So how can we enhance that mood? Oh, we can bring something to eat, or we can do this or that, or go for a walk, you know, like that. So they're analyzing, but within it, they can do. That's the way their brain's wired. But the men, it's emotional, or they think. They don't have the opulence of both at the same time.
How is it that
how do we exchange? How would it work for a man? Which? Yeah, but that's spiritual. It means spiritual experience is something else. Because the point is on the spiritual platform, we are feminine. You know what I'm saying? So that's just there. That's what it means. One has to understand it's just the way it is. Krishna comes as his own devotee to get that experience. He can't experience that as himself. You understand? So he has to come as female to understand what it is that it's being experienced. He can't experience it as male. Just the way it is. Right? Balam and others, they don't have to come because they get both experiences because they are also ashray. They're masculine, but they have the principle of ashray, so they can appreciate it. But Krishna is purely Vishai. There's only one pure Vishai in the cause of creation. That's Him, Krishna in Vrindavan. Every other expansion of Krishna is His servant. So they're God and servant. That's why Balaram's called the Supreme Personality of Servant or Godhead. Because He is Godhead and He is servant. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. Is that it can't. So it's just a different angle. And it's not what point is what works for the individual, that's what's used. So the men use their method, the women use their method. There's common element, many times it's common, just the approach to it's different. You know? It's like the man, you got the house and this and that, and it's this, you know, so many things about it. This one do this, this one's that, and, you know, got it all under control, got all the things that I want in all the right places. Right? And then it's his house, he feels comfortable. The woman, it's what experience you get in this room and that room and this furniture, that furniture. Different approach. You know what I'm saying? That's why he's saying building a house together is one of the major causes of breakup in relationships. Right? Because the reason to approach it is so different.
Why is
why does the scripture say that if a woman rules the country will be lost? Because the platform of attachment has a tendency to allow standards to be dropped. You know what I'm saying? That would be the point. Otherwise, as far as skill in that, they could probably do just as well. That would be one. Another would be, is this the pressures from, means that the woman can do, run things, manage things, but the sense of proprietorship has to be there. It has to be theirs. You know what I'm saying? So because it's theirs, then there's attachment to it, and if there's attachment to it, there's endeavor to take care. Now, problem comes up, as long as everything's going smoothly, that's great, and a good experience is coming. But the women can't function without that pleasant experience. Now, if things are going wrong in the country, it's tough. So they have to be able to find it somewhere. So, unless the woman has a man that completely can give shelter to her, then it won't work. You know, we've given an example before. You had what was her name? The Iron Lady in England? Margaret Thatcher. She was great up to the day her husband died. The day her husband died, she fell apart. She probably couldn't manage her way out of a wet paper bag now. Her whole strength came from her husband. And for that, she could go out and deal with, you know, all the problems of having to deal with, you know, a country, you know, and especially a country like England, you know, where 101% of the population is mental. You know, so that she could do it because of the husband. So the point is you can't guarantee she's going to have such a husband. Maybe they have, right? Maybe they don't. If they don't, it's a problem. Or some support. They have to have it, just like you're saying. Women want to be gurus, fine, but who's the support? They're not going to stand on their own.
Are you saying that?
No, it means that he's able to give the support. Women are always more strong than men. But the women need the support. Just like, how big are the flames and how big is the piece of wood? Right? By volume, the flame is bigger. Right? So to that degree that the flame can consume the wood, to that degree it's bigger. You know what I'm saying? So the more powerful woman means she's able to gain more from the men. The point is what I'm saying is, but without you take away the wood, there is not a flame. That's the point. That's the point here. Saying a side point on another thing is that the wood is also consumed. But that's another social point. We won't deal with that now. But, so you understand? So that's the thing, is that they're powerful, but still they have to have that foundation. Right? You know, it's like the electricity is there, but it has to have the generator and the wire. Right? Or you have the lightning, but it has to have the cloud and the ground. You know, or a flag has to have a flagpole in the wind. But if the flag is flying, no one's noticing the wind or the flagpole. You just notice the flag. Right? You just notice the fire. No one goes, wow, great wood. No, there's us. You know, they look at the fire. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. So the women are more powerful, but they still are dependent upon, it's just the way it is. Energy is great, but they still are dependent on the energetic. there, but it's just, okay, then why is the man going out and you know, riding 2 hours to work and sitting there in office he hates and bringing the money home and kids are yelling and screaming and this and that? Why is he there? Just because he loves having a bad time? Or? Right? So who's more powerful? So that's the point. That's why if women aren't trained, then your society is hell. So the more and more the women become so-called free, it's simply free means to make trouble. That's all. That's all. In other words, their energy is not directed in a positive way that gives a long-term positive result. They want immediate result now, and so then that's a disturbance. That's why in the Vedic culture and that, they're so careful about the women, because the strength of your culture is basically on the training of your women. Of course, women come from qualified men, as we mentioned before. So only qualified men can make qualified women. But what you're going to see in the society is the women and their influence. Does that make sense? So the two go together. Men make women. Women make potential men and women, but they can't actually create them. Right? Does that make some sense? It's because of a good father you had a strong daughter, or a good husband you have a good wife. You know, or a boy becomes a man. Does that make sense? Because of the father. So, because that's where everything's connected. But at the same time, if they don't act, then it'll make everything a mess. The children aren't trained, the women aren't trained, and you have a mess. That makes some sense? Point is it's not clear little boxes with little arrows and all that. There's overlap. Just like there's night and day. The twilight is which? That's the point. There's always overlap. And especially you'll have overlap because the men aren't really men because they're actually feminine. So that femininity as a jiva bleeds through their masculinity. So therefore they're not as independent as they should be. Right? And I'm just talking the conditioned platform. And the women aren't pure women because there's that masculinity that I want to control and enjoy. So they're not actually women. And so that's why there's a problem. Because the men aren't really men, the women aren't really women. So the more they follow, but the culture that's given is the culture of what an actual real man would do and what an actual real woman would do. And if you follow that, then you get the best result. So what you're having to fight against is the conditioned nature to act as a jiva who wants to be God. That's the problem. You know, it's like the women in the spiritual world, what Mother Yashoda taking care of Krishna is everything, and there's nothing else in the universe, but in the center of her universe is Krishna, not her. You know what I'm saying? But in the material world, the woman herself is the center of the universe. Everything else is a satellite around that. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it's not pure feminine. And here, the masculine is not pure because it's not completely detached. Krishna is completely detached. Therefore, he can give full shelter. But he has needs to gain. In other words, energy has to take from energetic, right? That's where energy comes from. But the man has to take from the woman. So that means on some level she's the energetic. She's the masculine. So he has to take. So that's a weakness. But it works in the material world because the women, to some degree, want to be the controller and enjoyer, so that much they don't mind. If the man wants more than that, then they think he's feminine. But if he's less than that, then that's respected by them because they're more of a man than she is. Does that make sense? You know, when you get down to this level, it gets pretty weird. This is the underlying psychology that's there. You know, the unconscious underlying. They have a sadhana. So it's not as nice as the outside society that has a 75% divorce rate, and that's just what we hear about. Okay, so has it become more? No, the point is that it just becomes different. Just the devotees have worked out unique and different ways to men harass women and women harass men. You know? It's just different. But the principles are exactly the same. There's no difference. If you understand how the material world is working, you won't see any difference. The point is the sadhana is like this, is that the men are having a sadhana, but the ones that have to deal with women, the point is it's the nature that men have to be sensitive. So if they're gross, then how are they going to interact? So they don't know how to interact, so there's no interface. They feel that you're tough and mean, but can you be tough and mean outside? If you, let's say you work at a job and your boss is a woman, can you be tough and mean? No. So then why will it work in our society? Right? It's something different, right? You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't work. It's the principle that won't work. So the point is that the men aren't engaging their need for interaction with women according to the Vedic principles. If it's Vedic, means you have nothing to do with them, and if you have something to do with them, they use modern. And figured out how to use Vedic by interacting. Right? Kardama, he's a austere brahmachari, but his plan is to get married. But he's a Brahmin, his lifestyle is simple, he's austere, he lives in the forest, he lives in a hut, he has nothing. He marries Devahuti, who's a princess. She being trained, she being chaste, she just does what he does. So he's a Brahmin, she's a Brahmin. Right? Then, after seeing that, she's completely committed to that, and her qualities are that rare, then she would be a proper mother of a son because she is humble, submissive, she has all the good qualities. Then, now he turns to the thing of, okay, now what is her? What is she? Right? Before that is, he's there, he has his standards, they have to be set. But then after that, then he says, she's a princess, she's used to nice living. It's within my power to give that to her. So he creates a palace that can fly anywhere in the universe. You know, where you want to go, it goes there. You know what I'm saying? So that's because that's a consideration of her. Right? But do you ever hear talk of that? Not that detail, but that principle amongst our men. No, I'm the man, I'm the leader, and it stops at that. So it's just tattva, it's not rasa. A leader, there's rasa there. People follow a leader because of the exchange, not just because he's in charge. That's the mistake. And that's why the family system doesn't work. Or even our management. It's just, I am the authority, that's it. But it's not that I have to act like one. It's not that I have to, it means, you are, because I'm, today they announced I'm the temple president, so now from today you have to completely, as all the rules say, be a submissive follower. But what about all the rules that it says about leaders? How many rules in the Bhagavatam is it giving about the leadership qualities of the great persons? Is that looked at? No. It's just, okay, the man's, you know, superior, wife is junior, at best. That's the only rule that's noticed. It's the only one I've ever heard talked about. What about the sense control? What about the Devahuti is sitting there and her hair is going mad at her, she's becoming dirty and all that because of respect for her husband because he's so sense controlled. Right? They've been living together 9 months, he hasn't touched her. And there's no mood of sense gratification. What about that? That's why she's doing it. Not just because he's the boss. That's there. But he has to act like one. You know, it's giving there the other things. The example, okay, because I'm the husband, I say what goes. But I said, authority is okay, but cleverness is more. You know, I said, no, but, you know, without authority, then great, go for it. If you're clever, you're automatically authority. Does that make sense? So the point is there's the tattva, that's the rules, but then there's the rasa of how it's applied. There's a culture of application. It's not applied, it doesn't work. So devotees take the tattva, you know, that's the one thing, that's what Prabhupada mentioned about the two. You have the religion without philosophy is sentiment, right? And philosophy without ritual, I mean without the culture, is mental speculation. Right? When it comes to philosophy, then everybody agrees. You know, there's nobody in ISKCON will say that Krishna is not God and chanting Hare Krishna is not the process. But when it comes to discussions on anything to do with culture, I mean anything, there's not one point left out. It's pure mental speculation. Because they're simply trying to affect an interaction with others based on philosophy only. They don't want to accept the culture. Absolutely don't. That's why it's not working. It's not because of the sadhana of this and that and so many things and he wants to chant his japa and his wife wants to chak pujalpa. No, it's nothing to do with that. You know, because you see the opposite. You see women who are, you know, totally in the temple, chanting grounds, doing everything like that, and they think the husband's mine. Of course, they have to have the husband. They have to know he's there so they can call him Maya. He said, okay, see you later, then it's hey. You know. What about your duty, this, that, you know, all these things. Well, what about yours here in the temple? You know what I'm saying? So, that it's only a symptom of the lack of culture. So the point is that one can only go into the culture if one is detached. If one goes into it attached, then there'll just be more Hindus. We don't need that. There's already enough of them. Right? Does that make sense? So you have to emphasize the detachment. Then those who are intelligent will take that detachment and then apply. Because a good brahmacharya makes a good grihastha. He's not a good brahmacharya, he will not be a good grihastha. Right? If I take a half rotten potato, I cannot cook a nice sabji. I take a first class potato, I can cook a nice sabji. So, the boys are only going to, until they're detached and renounced, they're not going to be good brahmacharis. Therefore, they will not be good grihasthas. So you have to, but that's where you start. You know? You understand? You know, it's like you got to wash the rice, then you boil it. And then if while you boil it, well, you got to wash the rice, you know? No, that was before. Does that make sense? So therefore, you have to start it like that. And then from there, it will gradually come. The problem is devotees not understanding this, tried to throw out what little they did try to follow. Oh, it didn't work, and then throw it out. They misapplied it, and then throw it out and just take modern. That's not it either. No, you use your intelligence, and what worked, keep. What didn't work, throw out. That makes sense? More Vedic. It is. Because but it wouldn't have a say is that it wouldn't be organized. In other words, it wouldn't be organized formally. It would just be those who are in charge would be talking with them, finding out we're working. Because the point is this, if you're working on the assembly line, if you have difficulty doing your job because the machine is inefficient, then you ask them, because they don't want to be bothered. You know, the profits is somebody else's, but it's difficult to do their job. If you made it easier for them to do their job, then there's more profit, naturally. And if you give that incentive like that, because before it's natural, if the boss has more, you get what's left over. He buys new furniture, you get the old one. That's the rule. Right? The master of the house doesn't sell his furniture, he has to give it to his servants. Right? I'm just saying, that's the rule. So, you can imagine, as he gets wealthier, that means the quality of what they hand down is better. Yeah. So, anything that works, it works because it's closer to the Vedic. And any aspect that's not working is because they're not following the Vedic. That's the way it is. They don't know why. They just observe the material energy. Hey, this works. I see a pattern here. They'll take that part, so they'll get that part to work, but they don't notice that this part's connected to that part. That's why there's a deficiency in whatever the karmis come up with. It works great in one area and destroys another. But the Vedic is balanced, so it works in all areas. Because if you want it to work everywhere, it can't work in everywhere 100%. You know what I'm saying? But they get 100% here, and then they get zero over there, and then they go 100% here and get zero here. So the Vedic, you get 80%, and then it works everywhere. So 20% you lose, okay? But it works. Because that's the material world's not perfect. It's not going to work 100%. You know? Just like I think in a chart someone told me the other day, the highest they can get is 92% compatibility. That's as good as it gets. It doesn't get better than that. So that means 8% doesn't work. It depends upon who it is, I guess. They'll have different 8%. But there's differences in the mind, difference in the intelligence, difference in this and that. But as high as you can get, I mean, we could probably find exact detail what that 8% is. But there's 8% that you cannot get. Whatever. But I'm saying, I've been told the 92% is what Shiva and Parvati have. So that's as good as it gets. 92. It's not 100. That's all the better it gets. So if that's all the better they get, you're not getting any better than that. So it's just design. The 8% creates the variety. So here it drives you nuts because you want to be God, but you can't. You know what I'm saying? But in the spiritual world, God is God. So things that don't quite work are fun for Him. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the point. So for him, all these obstacles for him are fun. Here they drive you nuts. That makes sense.
Just going back to when men and women are operating from the real platform, for example, involving
the real platform meaning?
Emotionally. So when men are being men and women are being women. This is just subject while you're not on the liberated platform. When you got on the liberated platform, is it that men actually take on their female tendencies? Because everything's in relation to Krishna, so therefore they're being...
How did you see, when Prabhupada meets, okay. You understand? The question is okay, this thing of men and women manifesting here, then that's on the material conditioned platform, liberated platform, they act more like women. point is what is a woman? You have the form of a woman and how it behaves and acts in their relationships. And then you have the actual feminine mentality. Because all energy is feminine. So you have Sri Dham, Sudham, and all them. Their form in that, they will act like boys, but they're only doing it just to please Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's not that it's going to change. Did Prabhupada walk like a woman or something? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like that. It is, you're dealing with some material energy. The energy doesn't change. It becomes spiritualized. Right? The copper wire, whether there's no electricity or electricity, is the same copper wire. Right? So, you take the masculine form, it's an expansion from the universal form. You understand? So it's always going to walk, talk, and act like a man. Just like the woman. That's why I laugh when they say liberated. They still act just like women. If you know what a woman is. If you don't know, then you may be fooled to think they're different. But they're exactly the same. They still walk, talk, and their values and how they manage and operate is exactly the same. They can't get away from it because it's like taking a knife. It only cuts. You know what I'm saying? You know, like that. You say, no, I'm using it as a pillow. But you notice that little red mark on the side of your head? No, it's a great pillow. What do you mean? You know what I'm saying? It's still, you're not going to change. Okay, or I'll turn it around the other way. But you notice the hole in your mattress. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't change. So that's going to act in the same way. But the difference is going to be the consciousness is not going to be exploitive like conditioned men and women are. That's the thing. So that will go away. That's why you'll feel safe with, you know, someone like Prabhupada. There's no exploitive aspect. At the same time as that masculine aspect is there, so women feel very comfortable from that side. Right, so no one feels, and the man feels because he's a man, so they feel very comfortable also. So it just works. So it's not that they become more. That's the sahajas do that kind of stuff. They're more advanced, so then they start to act like women and stuff. Shaki Bakis, they dress up as women.
So as long as we're in these bodies,
it will function. It will still function. Even when you get to the spiritual world, it will still function. Men's bodies still work like men's bodies, women's work like women's. That's why it's there, because you have that relationship with Krishna. Well, here it's just what's created by the material energy. So it's not us. We say we're not this body, but it exists, so whose body is it? That's what's not when you go, Prabhu, I'm not this body. Is that okay? That's okay, but whose body is it? It's not yours, so therefore you can't do what you like. It belongs to Krishna. Krishna's made this body, it acts in this way. It walks, talks, and thinks in this way. That you're not going to, because it's his. You just happen to be riding in it. You know, you're riding someone else's car, you know, like that. You know, so it's still going to act like that car. Whether you're riding it or someone else is riding it, doesn't matter. It's just the way it works. Does that make sense? So that's the point. So if it's not, then how is this body used in Krishna's service since it's Krishna's? You know? Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the whole point. The tattva has to be applied into the rasa. The culture has to come up. Then the application socially in that works. But even spiritually, Vaishnava etiquette is there because Krishna, it's not just tattva. You know, it means if you took it, okay, he's God, but where is that in the spiritual world? And then there's Golok Vrindavan, which is higher. So which one they know he's God? Which one is the tattva more prominent? Which one is it less prominent? So that's the whole point. Until there's a balance between the knowledge, the philosophy, and its application, it's the etiquette, then it'll be a problem. Especially for us, because we want to go to a place where it's, you know, so much is the rasa. you want to go to Vaikuntha, then it's a little easier, because then the rules, regulations, you can relate to it, it's easy to find a common ground. But we follow rules and regulations, but ultimately it's the devotion to Krishna, the love, that's the higher principle. You know, in other words, we follow it to get to there. And then love has its own path. Does that make sense? It has its own laws. Is that okay? Okay, last point that we'll end here. Yeah. What can we do to increase culture? Except that it's important. Right? And then gradually approach it. We shouldn't do a pendulum swing. Otherwise, that'll be stupid also. Otherwise, you get Hindus. You know? Because, yeah. Because that's the point, is by culture, these by culture and that we're, by religion, then we're Hindus. Because Hindu, by modern definition, means one who follows the Vedic literatures. So that's a, by philosophy, we're Vaishnav. So we've accepted the Vaishnav philosophy, but we haven't accepted the culture. But if we do the typical American 100% or zero, then it all goes to that, and then we forget the other side. But you have to, the two are supposed to be balanced, because otherwise one side's the Mayavadi, the other side's the Sahajya. So the razor's edge is in the middle. Is that okay? It's always there, because everything we do is actually culture. What we deal with is the application. Chanting our rounds, it's the holy name, it's our relationship with the name. You have mangalartics, your relationship with the deities. We're singing for the deities, dancing for the deities. You have the Vaishnavas, you're interacting with them to serve Krishna. Right? Prasad is Krishna, you're honoring that, your relationship with Krishna. But we tend to forget that and just get into the material. Is that okay? Okay. I should probably end here. It's getting all right. So. Continue later. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarvajana Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaina Tai Gaura Prenaha ki. Take what's given to us by our acharyas, which is, you know, have all those elements in it.
Because I think they're very similar.
It is very similar. There's a slight different flavor. The main principle is there. So wife is chaste. Okay, so how does she show that chaste chastity? You know, whether it's, you know, a Mangala Sutra, or whether it's red sindoor on her head, or just red sindoor as a dot, or, you know, or this kind of bangla, that kind of bangla, that doesn't really matter to us. The principle is, what is the, is that, that principle of chastity, that is gained. You know what I'm saying? You know, for Americans, then, you know, they'll generally see, they'll gravitate for this or that, or they'll pick something like that. But those who are from the Indian community, that generally they'll follow their own. Sometimes they follow ours. You know, like South Indians or Bengalis, they wear this navy, you know, dress style. It's not their own dress, but that's just what the devotees wear. But they can wear their own, no problem.
And there is this question about Bengali in the dress, because in the Gopi Gita, who is the same Shulka Dasika? Now, Vallabhacharya says that Mohana Baba used to buy some slave girls from Bengal.
Yeah, because they're good. The Prabhupada said no one's better service than the Prabhupada. They're so much more personal and sensitive and all that. You know, because most they get their sense that they're emotional, but they're not so intelligent, or they're intelligent not so emotional. Like North would be emotional but not intelligent. South would be intelligent not so emotional. Bengal is both. Like that. You know, so they'll, if they like you, if the emotion is there, then they'll really use their intelligence to do the best service. So if they're on a good day, there's no one better than Bengalis for like that personal service and interaction. On a bad day, that's another point.
Basically, in my book, the way to serve you is to do the best in the
world. That's why they're all over the world. That's why the devotees before in the 80s were taking the Bengali devotees all everywhere. But because they couldn't sustain their culture over there, then they left the temples. It gets too dry for them, the temples. The Western devotees are too dry. They don't interact. There's a way to do service. But the Bengali service is based on good interaction with other persons. And that's why you see they leave, but they don't leave and go out on their own. They leave and there's a little Bengali community. They're all outside the temple and they all interact with themselves. I never understood that, but one devotee pointed that out, one Indian devotee pointed it out.
The Vedas have something similar, that if their so-called rule, unsaid rule, is that they will always take sides of the Vedas, even if the person of the Vedas is wrong.
It's natural, because that's a rule of fact. You always, someone who's a member of the family who's been insulted by somebody, the whole rest of the family should avoid that person. That's just a rule of family. It's one of those cooler rules. You know?
But if the Kshatriyas have that, even if your son is wrong, you punish him.
That's there, because he's there to establish Dharma. The other one is just, that's just interaction. Because the kings are half-half. They got the emotion, that's so they can relate to the Vaishyas and Shudras, but they got the other aspects so they can relate to the Brahmins. So that's where they implement it, because the Brahmins wouldn't just forget it. It won't work, so the Kshatriyas don't forget it, so they can establish.